And with that, let's move to item 9, which is to consider and take possible action to establish an investment committee and adopt an investment committee charter. This is an action item. Karen, lead. The floor is yours.
Yes. Good morning. Sticking with the investment theme of today, there's been an interest from the board chair to establish an investment committee. That would be a standing committee, very much like the audit committee that is currently the only standing committee that this board has. The board chair is able to, under our regulations, to establish committees of the board, but we thought it'd be a good idea to present this item to the full board and prepare a draft investment committee charter that the board, the full board, can review and consider adoption of, so that there's a clear mission for the investment committee and clarity about how many members, how often it meets, and that kind of thing. One thing I will mention, because an ad hoc committee was mentioned previously today, there is a difference between a standing committee and an ad hoc committee of the board. An ad hoc committee is established for a limited purpose, and it's a limited duration type of thing, maybe 3 to 4 months, something like that. And then the need goes away, the committee completes its task, makes a recommendation to the full board. With a standing committee, that's a long-term committee, and it is subject to the Brown Act, meaning that it meets just like you are today in public. An agenda is posted, minutes are taken, and most importantly, the public has an opportunity to observe, be present, and comment. That's a big difference between a standing committee and an audit committee. Let me pause here and see if there's any questions.
Not seeing any.
Okay, and so we do have a draft committee charter. We put it together based on the audit committee charter that we already have in place for the audit committee, and then made it more specific to investment topics. So on the second page of the charter, which is in your agenda packet, you will see 10 items listed that are proposed to be the responsibilities and duties of the investment committee. And that's for your discussion.
Great. Let me, are you done with your presentation?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I'll fly back over and point out that the proposal in item 9 is really an outgrowth of the ad hoc investment committee, which was formed earlier this year. We did have a meeting and we had several exchanges between us about whether to have or not have an investment committee, and if you had an investment committee, what would the role and what would the real utility and purpose of that committee be? And so let me say this just from the standpoint, and I'm happy to have any of the ad hoc committee members speak on this, of course. But I would say it's easier to tell you what the proposal is not as an overarching principle, and that is the idea of having an investment committee is not to have a delegation of the board's fiduciary responsibilities for investments be made to a committee. That's decidedly not the intention. I think every ad hoc committee member agrees with that statement. If not, I'm sure they'll speak. But that's first and foremost. One of the actual impetuses for the creation of a committee was to actually have a more robust board involvement in the investment function. We saw a little bit of that today, which I thought was great in terms of the quarterly report, the risk diversifying sub portfolio report, the Q&A, really encouraging to me. It's not about delegating board responsibility. It is about encouraging a more robust board involvement in the investment function, including the due diligence function. Those were some of the discussion items amongst the ad hoc committee members, in which hopefully got reflected in the charter. I provided some comments to Karen, who had provided the outline of the charter, that and my comments were really trying to reflect what the ad hoc committee itself had discussed and what I could glean from our exchanges as to what the core functions of that committee would be. So to me, it's really intended to help facilitate the board's involvement in the investment function. It's not a delegated authority to a committee that is otherwise not the responsibility of the full board. So that's the speech, the preamble. But that's really the basis for this. All right, so let's throw it open for thoughts and comments from board members on the item. Jerry.
I applaud all the work that the committee did. It's obviously evident here, and a lot of work is reflected. But I must say, as I wandered through it, I had some very ambivalent thoughts about it. I'm reminded of, unfortunately, some business cliches that I grew up with. One is, it almost seems like a solution in search of a problem. I'm a big believer in things that add value. And so the question is, to what extent does this actually add value? And to what extent does it, in effect, usurp some of the authority of the board? I mean, I know that's not what the intention is, but inevitably, I think that's what happens in this case. And that means that this subcommittee, regardless of the makeup and as well-meaning and well-educated as they are, they're going to be making recommendations to the board, which then becomes potentially a rubber stamp. It basically says, here's what the investment committee recommends. Are we all in favor of that? And the rest of the board says yes. So it's another old cliche. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, I'm just not sure what the value added is here. I'm open to further discussions about what it might be and what we think we're missing today. What problem do we need to fix with this solution?
So, well, let me take a crack at it, at least in terms of a response. I think that the very nature of the discussion we had earlier today on the quarterly performance and the overall plan direction, what we see in 1 year, 3 years, or 5 years, is the backdrop to the idea for having a committee be form to try to get greater board involvement in the actual investment function. By that, I don't mean picking managers, but in terms of involvement in due diligence. I guess I would say it this way, Jerry, being closer to the investment. For those who have served for more than 10-ish years, so I know that is, of course, you, John, myself, and I think on the cusp, David and Candace, 2015-ish? 2016? Okay. So, and I'm pointing to that as the pre and the post of when we transitioned through an enormous strategic undertaking from what our former investment structure was into the fully functional portfolio and really the creation of a very robust and active, in-house investment function, which is what we consciously did and have done. And my reaction over the course of time since 2016 has been, and I've said this to Tim, so he's not hearing this for the first time today, I felt a little bit more attenuated from the investments than I did in 2014, 2013, 2014, 2015. Not necessarily a bad thing, because in the old days, in the times I'm talking about, the board literally picked horses, right? We had the investment staff and our primary consultant produce recommendations in terms of asset classes, and we would interview managers in real time in our former boardroom at 1355 Willow Way, I think it was, and we would make a selection, and so that's not the most ideal way, I think. I hope we all agree to pick managers. I think it put a premium on who the best presenters were, who had their act down in terms of being able to present to boards and make the best you know, the best optical case for selection. And the good news is they were all really high quality managers. They came before us, right? So the top three or the top two in any category were really quality folks. So in one sense, we couldn't go wrong, but it's not necessarily the best way to pick horses. So over time, as we've gone to a delegated function, you know, I certainly feel very, very much removed from the investments versus what I felt I was much closer to previously. And I'm trying to, at least I'm trying to encourage us to have more of a middle position, which is to get closer to the investments, and whether that means more active board involvement and due diligence visits, you know, manager discussions, being part of that, but not actually doing it. That's the CIO's role, right? That the doing of the function is the chief investment officer and the investment staff. But how close we are to that is up to us. And so the real driver, at least for me, was to consider, and we had this discussion amongst us, you know, do you have a committee? And if so, how active is it? And does it in any way step into any of the functions that we've delegated to the CIO? And I think the charter that Karen created that I provided some input in actually tries to strike the right balance that keeps us out of the business of crossing the line from being a fiduciary to someone actively involved. So the idea for the committee was to highlight the function. I think it provides greater potentially accountability across all fronts, certainly amongst our investment consulting folks who provide services to us. And I'm not suggesting it's just Verus, any of our managers. And so that's the driving rationale. I probably belabored that, but that's the answer. Any other comments or questions on Jerry's question? Or John?
I had one quick one, and it's really mechanics. I would have thought, and I'm looking at page 3, item 6, the first sentence would read, the committee shall report its activities, period, or to the board, period, and not make written recommendations. Who actually prepares written recommendations in this kind of structure?
This would be the same as the audit committee.
We don't provide anything that I know of in writing.
We'd have to check, but I believe there have been written recommendations. Not very often.
Not very. Not that I'm recalling. That becomes a very real issue. Does somehow Tim and his team provide that kind of support to the investment committee?
It is generally the staff that will help create a draft for the board, the committee chair to look at and then approve. So the committee chair doesn't have to write a written recommendation on their own. We would support them. The staff would support them.
Okay. It's a challenge.
John, I could provide an example with the audit committee. You may recall the external auditor we extended by 2 years. So we first brought it to the audit committee to talk about what that extension would be look like without going out to an RFP yet because of everything that was going on. And the committee agreed to that. So staff wrote a memo that was then brought to the full board under your name, the chair of the audit committee. And then the full board discussed it.
Okay. It's very important to have a written recommendation from the committee to the full board. For transparency reasons, for governance reasons, we wouldn't want to make just an oral recommendation for board action without substantiating it in a document.
I'm not in disagreement with that. What I'm looking at is where the typically we as board members don't produce written results.
Correct.
Nor, for the most part, do committees, at least in my experience. My question was, it started out, I think, saying logistics as contrasted to philosophy, if you will.
Let's take the example of the investment policy statement, which is the purpose of the current ad hoc investment committee that has been formed. In that situation, a committee would work on the analysis and have an idea what they would like to recommend to the full board. And then, just like Christina mentioned with the audit committee example, staff would prepare a draft written recommendation from the committee to the full board. They would provide it to the committee chair, and then pending their approval, it would go to the full board. So the full board will have a written recommendation from the investment committee chair on what action to take on a particular issue. Maybe, for example, in this case, it would be the investment policy statement.
Maybe that's the focus I'm looking for. There would be assigned staff to the committee to assist in preparing written
Absolutely.
Documentation.
Yes.
All right.
All right, thank you, John. Any other comments or questions on the item? Go ahead. Dan, did you have your hand up?
Well, mine was into John's comment on that item six. And the committee will report its activities and written recommendations. Could that be when necessary to the board in the event that they didn't have an action, but they met? Because this is talking about potentially monthly or as needed. If they meet more frequently and there wasn't an action item, they can verbally report that. Is that right, Karen? But this, to me, looks like it would need to be written.
I think that's a good point. If it's just a report and not a recommended action, that can be done orally and not in a written documentation.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, I was following in my hymn book in the wrong place. I was looking at number six as opposed to Roman numeral six. I was trying to glean what you all were seeing in that. And now I see it. All right. In my defense, you have to scroll up. I'm looking at the very close up on my iPad, so I didn't have the page scroll. That's my story.
Just a quick comment, following on to Jerry's concerns. I think, I very much share your concern about excessive numbers of committees or kind of call it big government overreach, I think in this case, though, an investment committee could be warranted here. Looking at the staff and thinking about the challenges they have ahead and the way that things will change for them in the next few years. Bringing on a new risk system, new analytics. We're talking about getting to a point where they're being more tactical about the rebalancing opportunities and investments they make. And just generally being a little bit more active. I think that requires a philosophical change, a lot of education, potentially even staff turnover. And that kind of growth process and structural change on the investment staff needs a lot of interaction with the board at one level or another. I think the committee's kind of the proper forum for that, and that the depth of interaction is probably pretty comprehensive, I would think, across a lot of different facets of the program. And then to follow on, thinking about how the staff is changing at the same time that the plan's needs for the investment program are changing. As you approach, knock on wood, fully funded status, our goals for the investment program will shift over time, right? The risk return objectives will change. We've already talked about maybe changing the size of the liquidity program. There's other approaches to consider. And I think as the plan's needs change, the staff is changing, those are some big conversations going on. It's a lot of discussion for the full board, I think. And a lot of that can be kind of handled at the committee level before it gets elevated up.
Well said. Any other thoughts or comments? David?
Yeah, very well said. Thank you, Jay. So I think a committee would enhance engagement between the board and the investment staff versus there is a risk with where we're at currently of just, well, that's what the investment team recommends, so we'll just go along with it. So I think with the committee, it'll enhance overall board understanding of our investments and strategy and decision making and so forth. So I think it would be a good thing. Your point about value add is important. So I think if a committee is formed, that needs to be part of the ongoing discussion. How are we adding value to our overall function and helping us understand and engage with respect to investments. So, yeah.
All right. Thank you, David.
One other point of clarification. I think I heard you say that there might be this committee might choose to do site visits. Is that a possibility or something?
No. It was really that the committee. One of the things we talked about and exchanged ideas on in the ad hoc was the idea of ways to greater encourage board member involvement in the due diligence work that the investment side does. That is attending meetings, being available, or having the time to get involved in actually manager meetings when we're doing on sites, that kind of stuff. So it was really the committee would be trying to foster and encourage that.
May have been just the opportunities I had, but I actually found site visits to be remarkably unhelpful. It's a dog and pony show. They bring in all nice snacks for you, and they show you they have computers, and then you all walk off and say, good, they had computers. And then, as you've described it, or I'll describe it, the beauty contest that was done with site visits here I found equally useless. And so I just hate to see this now being possibly delegated to a committee of the board, which may on occasion have to do a beauty contest or participate in a site visit. I mean, if they want to, fine. I just found them myself to be of limited value in making decisions.
So, I mean, I had a different experience. I've had a different experience from
better
the past
snacks
on the due diligence side. I think I've told this story before, but I think I've been on the board 3 months and wound up on a due diligence visit back east. We had a manager issue that involved, I think, a key personnel change and some decision making of that. I'm not going to get into who the manager was. It's not important to the story. But for me, what was remarkable about it was the level of direct interaction with the key personnel from the manager, the level of angst displayed coming across from the manager. There was a very defensive posture taken, and it was an opportunity for me, certainly as a newer board member, to see how our and on this trip, the CEO was on this trip, so we had our full cadre of folks on that trip. I got a chance to see in real time, firsthand, and ultimately was a minor participant in it, the interaction between how our executive function, our investment function, dealt with a difficult manager situation and some difficult personalities. And I just had no, when you get on a board like this, you're on 2 or 3 months and you see the big picture things. When you get in the room and you see what actually happens, it was remarkable to me, and it was very educational for me to see how that real-time interaction went, the things that got said, things that didn't get said. All of that, and I didn't have the beauty contest experience otherwise. It was interesting on the due diligence visits I've been on, including one recently in the last year or so with Mitch. It was decidedly not that. You had the investment staff had developed a very strategic objective in terms of questions the individuals they were going to talk to collectively, individually, the order in which they were going to do that, and then had a lot of very detailed, intensive discussion about the investment, the firm, soup to nuts about how they roll or how they don't. And for me, and I think David attended that visit that I'm speaking about, it was really enlightening to see how the firm managed its people, how it managed its priorities. But I also got a chance to see our investment staff at work, right? And that to me was a huge value. And I came away with a real positive, you know, feeling about it. And I hope we, you know, leading up to that, I know Mitch had created the time. Tim and Mitch had created the time to kind of brief us on what that visit was going to consist of. And the idea wasn't to have a make work project for our investment staff. It was for us to just go along and see what it looked like. They gave us some important tools to have some key insights into what to look for. And I got a lot out of it. So it wasn't a beauty contest kind of a situation.
I was distinguishing between beauty contests here, presentations to us,
yeah,
when they're serial presentations that all could have been written by, you know, they're all the best. They also all have the greatest staff. They also all have the greatest results. And so I didn't find those particularly useful, as distinguished with site visits. One last question, if I might. Of the 20... 37 ACT plans, how many have, do we know how many have investment committees?
I think it's about 3 or 4.
3 or 4 out of 20. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I second what you say. I mean, that was my experience on on-site visits, due diligence visits, is to better understand that particular investment, the strategy behind it, and an opportunity to have some time with the investment team with respect to building relationships between the board and the investment crew, to hear the questions that they ask, to hear how they challenge the fund manager on what they're saying. There's a lot. It actually builds a lot of trust and reassurance because you see our investment team in action, and they just don't settle for the pitch. But there's a lot of questioning that goes on and digging into what the fund manager has to offer. So I've seen it as a very positive experience. I'm glad I've been on it.
Yeah, and I've gotten as much out of the and I called out the one visit early on, but there was a memorable later visit to a manager in San Francisco that was a very contentious meeting, to put it mildly. You know, there were difficulties, key personnel changes, and there's no substitute for me anyway for being in real time, just being in the moment and seeing it in real time and seeing how that exchange goes, because it was eye opening to me. To hear the interaction and responses from the manager in a couple of very crunchy situations. So anyway, I found it valuable.
If I could jump in, I'm always encouraged by new things, innovation. I support us moving forward. And what I might suggest is we reevaluate it in either 18 months or 2 years and just, I don't want to call it a pilot program, but let's try it and then decide once again, are we getting something from it? And what are the results? Just to sort of allay some of the concerns that have been raised by Jerry.
I think it's an excellent idea. I think, as a practical matter, I'd like to think we would do that anyway. But I think it's a good call out, a great call out about understanding that after a year or 18 months or whatever an appropriate time is, we can assess: are we adding value? I hate to use that phrase, but is the committee adding value? Is it having an effect? Does it need to be retooled? Should the charter be revisited? Lots of opportunity to discuss it. So, Candace, I think that's an excellent idea. Any other comments or thoughts?
I should add, there's one site visit that we did that was fascinating. It was when PIMCO was going through a huge fight. Mr. O'Leary and whoever the other guy was,
yep,
were having, how should I say this? They were having contests with one another in public. And we registered our unhappiness with them that they would have that in public at the loss of some, I guess, at least authority in the marketplace, and we told the group that this was ridiculous to have that kind of stuff. And soon thereafter, I don't want to take full responsibility for it, but soon thereafter, things seemed to be tampered down considerably afterwards. It was
your mere presence, Jerry.
No, not mine. No, I think they were getting a lot of feedback along those lines, but it was sort of like, give me a break. It was embarrassing to everybody in the community.
It was a very public spat. I remember it, and I missed that trip. I couldn't. I was originally planned to be on that trip and couldn't make it at the.
I'm trying to remember who the other guy was. Who was it?
Bill Gross.
Bill Gross, exactly. Yep. Very good. Thank you. Yep. That was a very interesting meeting. Thank you.
All right. Any other thoughts or comments? Donnie.
Of the three or four other 37 active counties that have moved to this, are they on the forefront in terms of moving from the model we currently have, moving towards this? Or are they moving away from this and they just still happen to have them? Like, are we on the forefront of, like, re-changing how we do things for the better? Or is this more of a historical tradition that only three or four still have?
So my understanding is more are moving towards them, although one, a near neighbor, is the entire board. Kind of, Jerry, to your point, which, Karen, I don't know exactly how they do that and then why it's not just board meeting. But where the conversation, I would say, having served on several of these, is it provides the opportunity where we had Mitch speak on something that comes annually. We do have quarterly meetings. We got that here. Why not more frequently or when it is necessary? Well, when necessary, it's going to come. But what is the temperature of the board and items? That's kind of what the committee will be able to relay in a greater depth than we generally get into already with our structure. But the biggest advantage seems to be it provides the investment team kind of some guidelines and guide rails around the board, so we're not all just calling on whatever the latest issue may be that day. And then that can be a reportable item, but it provides a little bit more structure to that. Again, absent the one example where it's everybody, because then it's just what we're getting now. But there is more conversation. I would say there was a lot at the SACRS meetings I've been at in regards to looking more towards that. It is a far greater standard, if you will, in the large S&P 500 companies of having that subset in with their own portfolio, which is very different because it's not necessarily going to be a Brown Act subject type of issue or bag 18 if you have a state. It's a fascinating thing that it is not a greater threshold, but there's a lot of conversation from trustees about moving that way and then how they get the structure. So we had it here using, we have a structure already using our audit committee and why not? Great question.
Any other thought? Oh, Karen, yes.
I'd like to just address the issue of attendance at a standing committee meeting. Because it would be a public meeting open to the public, the trustees are able to attend. All trustees are able to attend. It wouldn't be a Brown Act violation. The trustees who are not on the committee, they're not members of the committee, are attending as a member of the public. They're observing. They may make public comment, but they are not participating as a decision maker or in the discussions. They don't even sit at the dais at that point. Only the appointed committee members sit at the dais.
Excellent clarification. Anything further on the item?
Move to approve.
All right, we have a motion to approve and a motion and a second to establish an investment committee and adopt the investment committee charter under item 9. Any further discussion or questions?
Progressively as we move ahead, but on a formal reevaluation of it, on a, say, a two-year basis?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent idea. Does the maker accept an amendment to the motion to add the proviso that at or near 24 months or in that time frame that the board shall reevaluate the role and function of the committee? Fair enough. And the seconder? Agreed. All right, so that motion as amended is before us. Candace, does that comport with your request?
It does. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. All right, anything further? All right, hearing none, let's call the roll on the motion. Anderson.
Aye.
Chabotarev.
Aye.
Gordon. Aye. Holcomb.
Aye.
MacDonald.
Aye.
Mirzwa.
Aye.
Phillips.
Aye.
Wong.
Aye.
And Sloan.
Aye.
All right, that motion carries 9-0. And I believe item 9 also, I'm prepared if need be to make the appointments today if we want to do that. Is that appropriate? Okay. So with that in mind, in terms of the establishment of the investment committee, I'm going to appoint, absent objection or a desire of the member to not serve, I'm going to appoint the following four individuals to be on the investment committee. David MacDonald, Jay Kwan, John Phillips, and Dan Mirzwa. And I'm going to designate David MacDonald as chair and Jay Kwan as vice chair of that committee, respectively. Any questions? Objections? Hearing none, that'll be the order unless you want to revisit it and change it.